The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
100 days of a road closure due to flooding, and some farms still underwater after nearly 6 months.
I'm not going to have a harvest on this block of land this year. That means I'm going to be down, well, in excess of £100,000. Come this time next year, there's not going to be a lot of produce to sell. Prices are going to go up, and there is going to be shortages, I'm sure of it.
New urea restrictions come into force tomorrow.
Any application of solid urea and liquid UAN fertiliser has to have the inclusion of a urease inhibitor.
And how's lambing going? How are the markets performing? What's in the news?
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Hello and a very happy Easter to you and yours. Clocks forward, so an hour's less rain, but we're still waterlogged and not much is going in. This is the Farming Programme podcast for March the 31st, 2024. I'm Steve Orchard. In the news this week, DEFRA has responded to industry concerns about food security by announcing a cap on the amount of some environmental incentives that farmers in England can claim under the Sustainable Farming Incentive. It comes after a small number of cases were applying to take 80% of their land out of food production. New applicants to the SFI scheme will only be able to put a maximum of 25% of their land into the 6 SFI actions that take land out of food production. More than 100 tractors rallied outside the Houses of Parliament last week as part of the industry's protests against the direction of government policy on food and farming. Many were displaying Save British Farming and No Farmers, No Food flags. The protest was organised by campaign groups Fairness for Farmers and Save British Farming and made 3 key demands: a ban on substandard food imports, a ban on dishonest labelling, and more measures to boost British food security. Let's hope somebody in Westminster's listening. Pig slaughter numbers have plummeted to 2010 levels. Last week, the numbers were 34,000 below those of 2022, but the market is showing signs of a seasonal uplift. And producers are being warned to consider the very real threat of African swine fever as the virus continues to spread in Europe. ASF doesn't affect humans, but is a highly contagious and fatal notifiable disease. 3 councils, including Rutland, have defied the plant-based movement, passing new pro-farming motions in support of farmers in all sectors. The motions commit to encouraging residents to shop for food locally, and Rutland also committed to sourcing more homegrown produce, including meat, dairy and plant-based products, at council-catered events. New research has found that vaccination not only reduces the severity of bovine TB in infected cattle, but also reduces its spread in dairy herds by 89%. And 100 days have now elapsed since flooding closed Short Ferry Bridge and Ferry Road in Fiskerton, east of Lincoln. Some farms in the area have been inaccessible by road now for nearly 6 months. So to commemorate and commiserate with those affected, I went to the pub on Thursday, the 100th day of the closure. At the Tirrett Arms, I met with Mick Annenkin, Andrew Ward and First Henry Ward, who can still only access his home and business by boat. Henry, 100 days since the road was closed. We're here at the Tirrett Arms having a bit of a coffee morning, but the purpose of that, apart from raising money for the air ambulance, is to remind everybody that this problem hasn't gone away. Now, we're looking over the water at the moment. Which bit's yours?
Yeah, so directly across from us now is my farm. 200 arable acres I've got here, house and yard, completely underwater still. And we've been underwater in one part or another since the end of October. So 5 months that we've been underwater, not been able to farm the land, crops destroyed. And the only way to get to that yard's by boat still.
You still can't get to your home, your business, by road?
No, it's a nightmare. We did get down last week in a tractor. That was a bit hairy because going down the track we couldn't see the edges of the track, and there's dikes each side, so probably wasn't the most sensible thing to do, but we just had to get down and just have a look what was going on down there. But that farm's now essentially a lake, and that's my livelihood, completely underwater.
I was going to say, what's been the effect? Obviously financially is dreadful, but you know, the effects on your farm and you and your staff and the family and all the rest of it must be dreadful.
It's absolutely horrendous. It's been a really rubbish year, to put it mildly. you say, yeah, the financial implications sort of speak for themselves. I'm not going to have a harvest on this block of land this year. That means I'm going to be down, well, in excess of £100,000 in revenue this year. But then just mentally, just having to every day just looking at this water on your farm, not being able to farm, not being able to do your job, not being able to earn money, the pressure of it. You know, me and my wife have got a baby on the way, the first one, thinking about how I'm going to support them. It's just it's a nightmare. And this is the thing, we now need to try and do something going forward to get a plan in place to try and sort of manage this.
Now, from the public's point of view, of course, this is going to have a knock-on effect inevitably, isn't it? If you can't get a harvest this year, does that mean shortages? Does that mean prices go up?
Yeah, so obviously here, we're pretty a special case. We're still underwater. Now, I think, you know, not many other places in the country are like that. But around the county, Nottinghamshire, South Yorkshire, we've had it extremely wet. And the rest of the country, but especially this part of the world, extremely wet. And yeah, on the rest of our farming land that isn't underwater, we've got 1,000 acres of spring crops to plant. We can't get on and do it. It's so frustrating, like the sun's shining at the minute and you feel like you should be working and I just can't do it, it's too wet. And I do think we're going to see a lot of bare land. And yeah, I think come this time next year, there's not going to be a lot of produce to sell and prices are going to go up and there is going to be shortages, I'm sure of it.
Now, you mentioned a plan. Is there a plan? What's the plan? What can be done to stop this happening again and again and again?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So it's a difficult pill to swallow because this is my best soil that I farm anywhere. But we need to think a bit more pragmatically here. This has happened twice in 4 years. And as painful as it is for me to sort of say it, I think, you know, let's work with the Environment Agency. If they want to flood this land strategically to protect people's houses from flooding, because I don't want to see people's houses flooding, quite clearly, flood agricultural land over houses. But big but, we've got to be paid for that. It's a public good that we, you know, I've wiped out my living on this land for this year. We need some sort of compensation. I'm willing to let this land flood if the right scheme is in place to compensate us to hold water.
Is there a plan, though, to stop this happening in future? Is it dredging or what's got to be done?
Combination of everything. Yes, dredging. Big believer in it, especially in this, we're flat here. So from Lincoln to Boston, there's hardly any fall. We need water out to sea as quickly as possible. So that means desilting, dredging, call it what you want. All the trees need to come out of the rivers, get water out to sea as fast as possible. Need to sort Grand Sluice out at Boston, which is essentially our plug hole. Get as much water out to sea as quick as possible in these low-lying areas. In the uplands and higher up, yes, slow the flow. Stop it getting down to us as fast. And then, on top of that, do what we're talking about here at Short Ferry. Have areas designed for flood storage, because we are seeing climate change and we are seeing these extreme rainfall events. So, coupled with good maintenance of rivers and soft, you call them soft flood defence mechanisms, light flood storage areas, that's the way forward.
So why hasn't this happened then?
Good question. I think funding, Environment Agency say they're short of money, getting farmer support for, you know, not many farmers want to see, I don't want to see my farm underwater, but I've got to think pragmatically now. It's happened twice in 4 years. What other options have I got? It all takes time. But from my point of view, running a business, I ain't got time. I need answers, but I do appreciate they've got a lot of hoops to jump through. But they are doing some work behind the scenes. I just have everything crossed that they get on and we get some action and not just warm words, but, you know, because everyone could be a winner. At the minute, we're all losers, but we could all be winners.
All right, Henry, thank you, and let's hope something does get sorted soon.
Yeah, thanks ever so much.
Nearby farmer Mick Annenkin is in a similar position. Mick, are you and Henry not entitled to any compensation?
There's an option for flood relief, which is £25,000, and we have to justify it by invoices, and basically it's replacing fences and clearing dikes out. But, I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous situation. It's historical. Today is the loss of every all the crop inputs, fertilizer, sprays, everything's been lost. There's no returns. For this is 3 years out of four.
Yeah, as I say, it happened back in 2019. It's happened numerous times. Mm. We seem to be repeating things. What do you want to see done?
Well, obviously the Environment Agency, the riverbanks are vulnerable. The whole lot needs replacing. I've actually measured it and took videos of water coming through the bank, and they haven't got the funds to repair. They're on about a compensation scheme. If we get compensation, it would be a start to getting somewhere.
Trouble is, that doesn't stop it happening next time, does it?
It will definitely happen next year. 100% it will happen next year.
And I'm guessing you've not got insurance against something like this?
We can't get insurance.
And you're still employing staff? You've still got all your normal costs for that kind of thing?
Yes, yeah. Basically, if we hadn't got the other side of the business, we would be bankrupt now.
Last Monday, a meeting took place attended by the NFU president, Tom Bradshaw, a dozen or so local farmers, the chairman of the Environment Agency and the former flooding minister. And a farming meeting in Lincolnshire wouldn't be a farming meeting in Lincolnshire without Andrew Ward there. So, Andrew, what was discussed on Monday?
Yeah, it was an interesting meeting across there, Steve, because we had the chairman of the Environment Agency, we had Tom Bradshaw, myself, there was a group of 10 or 12 farmers. We formed a farmers flood group after the floods in 2019, and we still meet regularly. And also we had the chairman of the Environment Agency there, Alan Lovell, and also quite a lot of EA staff. And also, really importantly, we had Robbie Moore, who was the flooding minister. Now, Robbie's great. He's a young guy. His family farm in North Lincolnshire, and I know Robbie really well. And he's really proactive, which is really, really good. This is what we need. And we need the Environment Agency holding to account. The main idea of the meeting, or the object of it, was to look at the Boston Barrier. This is the new flood barrier that was built, and I think it was opened in 2020. Also, the Grand Sluice, that is where this water comes from, where we're stood now at the Tyrwhitt Arms. The first obstruction it hits in Boston is the Grand Sluice. That was built in 1772. So you can understand the problems there. We really are of the opinion that a lot of the floods and a lot of the problems that Lincolnshire has, not just this area, Lincolnshire, is because of the bottleneck in Boston around the new barrier and around the Grand Sluice. And it's that area that we're looking at that we really want some action on.
To enable the water to get out to sea, basically.
That's it, yes. And I'm trying to find out how much of Lincolnshire's water drains out to Boston. Because when you go out further north of Lincoln, you've got the Till goes into another river that goes into the Witham. It comes past here. So a lot of water actually ends up through Boston. There are one or two rivers south of Boston that don't come through, that go straight out to sea. But I would say there's probably 70 or 80% of Lincolnshire's land is actually drained and goes through Boston. So we need to make sure that Boston, all facilities around Boston, is properly opened up to make sure the water can get out as quick as it can. And at the minute, it can't.
Okay. And dredging?
Well, yeah, dredging's a big thing. This is a massive topic, and it's something that the Environment Agency just will not have on board. They will not take it on board. They think that it won't do any good. It does more harm than good. But when you see obstructions, and we've got trees just up here in the river channel here that's obstructing water, we've got bushes not far away, we've got the whole area of the river network has not been touched, a lot of it for 30 years. And without doubt, you know, if you have a pint beer glass and you half fill that with sand and then you put beer in the top, how much does it hold? Half a pint. And a river is no different. A river should not just be about for flow of water, it should be holding water as well. And if you've got a river that's got a lot of silt in it, it can't hold as much water as it can. And I think what people need to remember as well is regarding food. This is what we're looking at, is that a third of Lincolnshire sits below sea level, which is a phenomenal amount. And you get people say, oh, let that land flood. That area produces a lot of vegetables and a lot of food that don't just feed you and I locally, it goes all over the country. I think the last figures I counted was 27% of the nation's vegetables come from Lincolnshire, and a lot of that area is this land that we're talking about. So it needs to be pumped, it needs to be managed, and we can't have a one-size-fits-all water policy so that people say, hold it in the uplands, hold the water back. We don't want water holding back here. We're only 35 miles from the sea. It needs to go from here out into that wash as quick as possible. And at the minute, that's not happening.
So what's the plan? What was the end result of the meeting on Monday?
We did do some good, there's no doubt about it. But what is really frustrating, that whenever we suggest anything, or whenever we ask any questions of why aren't you doing this, like there's a lock at the side of the Grand Sluice that's not been used for 10 years, and you open that lock up and it will double the output of the water from the Witham into the Haven and then out to sea. And according to the EA, oh, that won't make much difference. Whenever we questioned them, it won't make a lot of difference. It might add an inch or reduce the water level by an inch. And they keep going on their models. They say, oh, our models have looked at this and our research has shown that this happened or this won't happen. But what we want to know is the modelling that they've done, is it on a river that years ago, an empty river, completely well-maintained river, or is there modelling done on the rivers now that's half silted up? Because the results they'll get from those models will be completely different.
So what are they saying they're going to do next then?
At the minute, they've said that we're looking at it, we're looking at maintenance, and we're going to look at doing more things. But at the minute, we didn't really get an answer. And this is what we want now from this meeting. We want now an action plan. We want a list of things and we want an action plan and a bit of direction to say, right, this is what we're going to do. When you look at the water out here, what they're doing isn't working, or what they're not doing isn't working, and they're not doing maintenance.
Otherwise, surely this is just going to happen. We're going to be standing here this time next year with the same conversation.
Exactly, and that is the crucial thing. We can't let that happen. We cannot let that happen now. We've got enough momentum with the government are on board. DEFRA are really supportive, and they're trying to hold the EA to account. They realise there is an issue, and it can't happen again because we've got people's livelihoods, we've got businesses here, and we've got the nation's food security. So you're quite right, Steve. It cannot happen again. And as a farmer myself and involved in this and other groups around the county, we're so determined to keep the pressure on.
Lovely. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
Yeah, that pressure definitely needs to be maintained until something effective gets done. And thanks to Mick and Henry too. Let's head to the fields that we can access now. A windswept and interesting Sean Sparling joins us with a crop report and some timely agronomy advice. Good morning and happy Easter, Sean.
Yeah, very good morning to you, Steve. Happy Easter. Good old March, many weathers, eh? In like a lion, out like a lion, blowing an absolute hoolie since Wednesday, and that's complicated spraying and fertiliser applications as we hit Easter. And once again, we've had more of the wet stuff, taking me to a little over 54 mil for March. And to cap it all, temperatures have been struggling this week to hit 12. And as a result of that, the soil temperatures have now fallen back into the low to mid 7s. So growth is slow. The filicron firmly in charge when it comes to leaf emergence now, and that's all temperature dependent. So this recent cold weather has really slowed things right down, and there's been very little change from a cereal growth stage point of view over the last 7 days or so. Things have greened up noticeably in fields of wheat and barley as that applied nitrogen's been grabbed by the roots, as the soil temperatures have lifted enough to accommodate a bit of active growth and to allow some mineralised and release. And as the sun shines and that chlorophyll fluoresces, it's great to see things starting to green up at last. But it is all a bit cosmetic because it's plenty cold enough for any rapid leaf emergence and movement. But as I say, if they look greener and that helps soothe the furrowed brows of farmers and agronomists alike, then that can only be a good thing. A lot of people chose to buy urea as their solid nitrogen source last autumn, and with April now upon us and nitrogen applications in full flow, obviously the restrictions come into play from the 1st of April 2024, which is of course tomorrow, and you cannot apply urea from now onwards unless it's been treated with a urease inhibitor. Now that applies to any fertiliser that contains 1% or more of urea nitrogen. It applies to both solid and liquid UAN fertilisers. Untreated urea can be applied from the 15th of January to the 31st of March, but from the 1st of April 2024, any application of solid urea and liquid UAN fertiliser has to have the inclusion of a urease inhibitor. Untreated liquid UAN, incidentally, can still be applied after the 1st of April if there is an agronomic justification provided by a FACTS qualified advisor that clearly demonstrates that ammonia losses are likely to be at or below the level of including that urease inhibitor. Now, this is clearly where the new urea rules are flawed, because urea losses are governed by temperature and not by the calendar date. For example, from the 1st of April now, 1st of April 2024, it has to have that urease inhibitor. But it's only 3 years ago that we had 25 frosts in April 2021. It was freezing all month. Soil temperatures struggled to hit double figures. So perfect for urea use, really, with few losses. April 2022, a year later, we saw most of the day temperature in the mid to high teens, 28 mil of rain, very few frosts, and the losses would have been 10 or 20% or even more of the nitrogen applied. So clearly we aren't really in the grip of the conditions that contribute to the volatilisation from urea, like we would have if we had dry soils, low levels of rainfall, increased soil and air temperature. And you do really need to be on in cold, damp conditions in order to prevent it volatilising and to get it down into the soil. So the conditions at the end of this last week were very good for urea applications, although the wind didn't actually help us get much of it on. So please do try and ensure that if you're out today and you're putting urea on, make sure it goes on in cold, damp conditions, because once temperatures start creeping up into the teens, that's when you lose that product upwards. Or you can, as I say, just change over to your ammonium nitrate if it's uninhibited. And this is where the discretion and the common sense comes with urea. And if the risk of volatilization is low because of cold air, wet soils, low soil temperatures, then your FACTS qualified advisor can make that call for you. But I would urge you to keep very accurate and detailed weather application records if you're going to do that, because I can guarantee they'll be looking for some poor sod to make an example of. You can, of course, continue to use ammonium nitrate, nitrogen as usual, because they're outside these rules. So obviously using ammonium nitrate removes any restriction of these application periods and therefore any requirement for urease inhibitors. Liquid UAN, which is a combination of urea and ammonium nitrate and contains, as I say, 50% urea and the rest is AN, also, as I also said, needs that urease inhibitor from tomorrow. And it's considerably easier to manage a liquid fertiliser because you can drop the urease inhibitor into the spray tank as and when required. Incidentally, don't forget, you don't want to lose any of the nitrogen you're applying up to the atmosphere anyway. So urease inhibitors are a pretty good idea in warming conditions, whether they happen in April or earlier than April, because that improvement in the nitrogen use efficiency alone is going to save you money. Urea's got a nitrogen use efficiency of about 50%. So every 100 kilos you apply, about 50 kilos gets to the plant. Ammonium nitrate, that's got a nitrogen use efficiency of about 60%. So 100 kilos of applied ammonium nitrate, about 60 kilos goes into the plant. So maybe we should be using urease inhibitors on urea and nitrification inhibitors on the ammonium nitrate far more widely than we actually do, because if we can reduce the losses by leaching from the ammonium nitrate and reduce the volatilisation of the ammonia with urea, then we increase the nitrogen use efficiency, whether it's April or not. And if we can increase that nitrogen use efficiency to 60% or more in urea, 75 to 80% or more in ammonium nitrate, that seems to be an obvious thing to do, doesn't it? To get much more back from the thing we're putting on. And I think there's going to be quite a move widening these restrictions personally across our industry as we go forward. But it's probably quite an important move if we're going to try and help reduce the impact we have on the wider environment, but it also ensures that we get more bang for our bucks, as it were, by not wasting our money on losses that we can actually cut down with these materials. But as ever, a combination of the right weather, good plant health regime that promotes and preserves the green leaf area, that's still the most obvious and basic thing that we can do. Modern fungicides are going to help you achieve that as well. So the more green leaf we get, the more chlorophyll, the more photosynthesis, the more sugars we produce, and the more sugars, the healthier the crop. But we do need the weather to be on our side for all of these things too. And there is the rub. Anyway, look, I've still got no beet in the ground. I've got way too much of everything still to drill. Very little change in that respect in the last week. Hopefully a bit more agronomy stuff next week if things warm up. Happy Easter, onwards and upwards. Not a swallow in sight yet, but it'll all change once they come home, I promise. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. In a moment, we'll see how lambing's going, get the market reports and weather forecast, and hear a special Easter message from Lincolnshire agricultural chaplain, Canon Alan Robson.
The Farming Programme, with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
This is the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. So Easter is upon us. You can crack open the chocolate eggs today. And as Sean said earlier, March many weathers, but there was plenty of sunshine when I visited Gelston Lamb near Grantham for an update on this year's lambing season with Chris Elkington.
So we're in the shed at the moment. We've got a few cade lambs in here. How's it actually gone so far? Because you split your flock, don't you, into the indoor and the outdoor?
Yeah,
lambs. So you're coming to the end of the indoor.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. Yeah, we've just about finished the indoor lambing, which has gone very well, really. We did think we were going to have a little bit of a break to catch up on some jobs, but someone got their dates wrong and we've started the outdoor lot.
Someone would be you, would it?
Yeah, it could possibly be me, yeah.
So what makes an outdoor and an indoor sheep?
basically anything that hasn't quite performed well enough outside is brought inside and given a last chance. And if they still are poor performing inside, then that'll be them gone. With the idea that everything outside eventually will be the best stock that we have, rearing lambs on grass, looking after themselves on just grass and turnips, and then hopefully you'll bring, you know, your genetics from your stuff that you keep will start to improve, and you'll end up being a good sort of flock.
So that'll improve the flock for future years?
That's right, yeah. That's what we're aiming to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how's it gone generally? What's the numbers and the quality like?
We've gone really, really well this year. We have struggled previously with poor scanning, sort of scanning at around the 160, 170 mark, which isn't really enough. But this lambing, we've scanned at 183 across the board over both flocks. So that was a big improvement for us, which we're pleased about. The indoor lot, they've lambed really well. We've not had any problems. We've not seen any Schmallenberg. And yeah, they've gone well. We just need a bit of dry weather, as everyone else does, really.
I was going to say, how's the weather affected things?
Yeah, it's been a really hard winter. It's just felt like it's gone on for a long time. We've been moving sheep more regularly because they trample stuff in. You know, they waste a lot of fodder in the winter when it's wet. So it's been hard work. And then now the fields are so wet, you know, we're having lambs just... they're just not happy, you know. They're in wet fields and up to the guts, and we just need some dry weather.
Does that mean you've got to bring them in more often?
No. Once they're out, they're out. We haven't got shed space to bring stuff in. The outdoor lambers, you do more harm than good bringing them in. You know, they're not used to anything like that. Hopefully cope with it as best we can, and hopefully we get some sun and some dry weather.
Be nice, wouldn't it? And how's the business going?
Yeah, business is really good. Lamb price obviously absolutely booming at the minute. As a whole, we're doing really well, and it seems lamb seems to still be very popular. We're selling a lot of lamb every week, and the pop-up shops are very successful. And yeah, we're still selling it, and it's all going really well.
Good, good. Well, long may it continue. Chris from Gelson Lamb, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Links FM Farming Market Report.
Starting with livestock from Louth's auctioneer Ed Middleton. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime cattle were in short supply, with heifers all in averaging 281.1 pence per kilo. Top price were J.C. Scully of Bournemouth at £1,507.85, or 284.5 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cool cows and OTM, Pennell Brothers of Louth top at 222.5 pence per kilo, engrossing 1,635.38 pounds per head. Moving on to the sheep, this week we had the first spring lambs in market, topping at £170 for AJ Colson Sons of Market Raisins, with a 38 kilos at a gain at £172. Moving on to the prime hogs, we had an SQQ of 368.4 pence per kilo and an all-in average pounds per head of £165.30. Numbers very in short supply, well-fleshed weighted hogs taking the premiums. Top price in the pence per kilo and the pounds per head goes to, again, AJ Colson and Sons of Market Raisin at £208 or 424 pence per kilo. Many pens again still knocking the 390 to 400 pence per kilo. Moving on to the cull ewes, this week we had an all-in average of £134.75. Top price this week goes to Scrivelsby Farms of Horncastle at £192, and their run of 12 ewes averaging £160.50. We also had a first showing of ewes and lambs. They topped at £95 for Woodthorpe Hall Farms. With business as usual tomorrow, that is Monday the 1st of April, so all prime cattle, hogs and ewes will be in big demand, so please give me a call with any entries. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Ed. And to the grain markets with Open Fields, Kit Dickinson. Morning, Kit.
Well, good morning, Steve. The Russian-Ukrainian war intensified with renewed efforts by Russia to disable port facilities in Odessa, whilst Ukraine strikes deeper into the Russian territory, targeting their oil refineries. After the initial uplift in prices, analysts and speculative fund selling returned to the market on the basis that the previous war-related price rises did not stick. Port facilities in the Ukraine, and particularly Odessa, will be held together with duct tape. There were reports of power outages and power plants being hit by the Ukrainian export activity, which does appear to be slowing as stocks run down. Russia continues to pump out wheat at an impressive rate, with March exports potentially at a record high. Russian prices rose again this week amidst stories that one of the largest Russian exporters had 400,000 tonnes of wheat loaded and could not get it away due to the certificates not being signed for poor quality. The company contend that they are being forced to sell their business for a fraction of its market value. Only one can speculate who is actually behind this, though. Looking forward to barley, the EU and the UK malting barley prices are being supported by the slow pace of planting. Prices are higher on both new crop and old crop, with planting well behind the area done at this time last year. Prices in Denmark and the Ukraine are lower for 23 crop as weak demand remains, but 24 crop prices are up in line with the French market. At the end of last week, spring barley planting in France was about 48% complete. This week, we should have seen an increase in the area done as the weather conditions have improved and could easily be up to 80%. Hopefully, they should be complete by the end of next week. But the remaining area to be completed is in northern France, where soils are still very wet. And the forecast for next week does look very mixed. Oilseed rape, Matif has struggled to hold the upward momentum, and we've seen some sharp declines as the market corrects its technical overbought position. In other edible oils, we have also seen pressure with CBOT soya beans, Malaysian palm oil and Canadian canola all down to technical selling as the position squaring ahead of the USDA report. There is also a tension on this report, given it has a history of moving markets. Looking at prices this week, April feed wheat 170 to 180, with a small increase to May at 172 to 182. August new crop off the combine 175 to 185 and November 188 to 198. Milling wheat premiums are currently £60. Feed barley for April 139 to 149 with again a small increase to May at 140 to 150. New crop off the combine 144 to 154 and November 161 to 171. Oilseed rape for April 333 to 343 and 334 to 344 for May. But there are limited prices going forward to new crop. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kit.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Cloudy but mostly dry to start the week, with a light easterly and highs of 12 Celsius. Cooler for Monday and Tuesday, with the wind backing northerly. Rain arriving midweek as temperatures rise to the mid-teens, and the wind, now from the south to southwest, picks up with gusts up to 40 miles per hour expected, and some heavy downpours to end the week. So the lambs are in the fields. A happy Easter to you. Hope you've managed to take a break and enjoy an egg or two later. If you've got youngsters, they're probably already gone. Canon Alan Robson, Lincolnshire Agricultural Chaplain, has a message for us for Easter Day. Alan, spring brings newness, rebirth, the start of another growing year, but it hasn't really swept away the problems and stresses.
Well, Steve, yeah, it's definitely true. Things feel out of kilter, don't they? We're bombarded with water and images from around the world. We're looking at sodden fields and swollen rivers and lakes where there should just be crops. So I ask the question, can Easter speak into any of this? It all seems really quite difficult. The one phrase I'm using on Sunday, this Sunday, is Mary wept. There's a sense of emptiness and isolation and worry and anxiety. But I then think, the teaching of Christ, that he had come so that we might have life and life in all its fullness. So if it feels unimaginable that we can find light in the darkness or amidst the wet, well, I've got to hold on to that faith that says we can. That it feels unintelligible, we can know the love and warmth through the heartaches and the anxieties. Well, I've got to hold on to the belief that we can. And when we're uncertain, there is hope and peace to be grasped. We might feel that it eludes us. But today, Easter, we've got to say, there's light beyond the darkness and love and warmth as we support each other. I want us all to hear this Easter, that we can know a positive future. There is always future if we look for it.
Let's keep fingers crossed. Let's look forward to a positive future. And as you say, let's support each other.
Yep.
Thank you, Alan. And I wish you, yourself, and your congregation and your flock a very happy Easter.
Thank you very much.
In 2 weeks' time, Sunday 14th of April, there's a charity tractor run taking place from Nettleton Village Hall. If you're interested in taking part, give Ian Dawson a call on 07741 249 804. And that day also sees the return of Countryside Links at the showground. We'll look ahead to that and the opening of entries for the British Farming Awards next week on the Farming Programme podcast. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, happy Easter and have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arroquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, BSI ISO 9001 accredited.